of the revenue you make, right? Much like in a startup.
Yes, man. And let's get some of our old soldiers back out.
Musicians to be professional. They know how to talk.
To help them wake up happy. It's not about a rectangle and a price.
But Cal has lived a very interesting life. Thus far, he's born and raised in California and left his corporate job as an engineer and moved to Eastern Europe at that ripe old age, or I guess ripe age at 24 years old, and settled in Ukraine. He has gone on to run a blog with over 10 million readers, co-founded an olive oil company. Is it Solo Olive?
You got it. Yep.
And now he runs Hire UA, which, from my understanding, Hire UA works as a business where it helps other business owners recruit top talent.
Yeah, correct. So we place overseas talent, mostly from Ukraine, but other parts of Eastern Europe as well, into businesses that can take remote talent, obviously. So people who are looking to, you know, hire someone at a better price than you can usually get, hiring locally in the States, and it's a good opportunity for people over here, obviously, with everything that's going on, and everybody kind of wins.
Yeah, so when I was listening to you tell your story on the previous podcast I was listening to, I got the impression, well, let's start here. When you got your degree in engineering, and then you started working in, you know, I guess corporate, but based off your personality, that was not a good fit for you.
Yeah, the thing that really kind of put the knife in it was I worked for a government think tank, and it was just very frustrating to me because if I wanted to make, say, one change to a system, I would have to have 6 months of meetings to make a 5-minute change. And it just wore on me to the point where I didn't even know what I was doing, but I started coming in like an hour late every day. I was working from like 10 to 4:30, taking a 2-hour lunch every day. And I realized like it didn't matter. And that's like what made me sad. I mean, like part of me was like, you're so stupid for leaving this because you don't have to do anything and you're making a good living. But it didn't feel like it actually mattered in any way. And it really didn't, judging by the fact that I was taking 2-hour lunches and coming in an hour late every day. So that's what really made me say, hey, you know, I want to go do something different. And I don't think all corporate jobs are like that. That one in particular was. I worked other ones that were a better fit that I would have maybe enjoyed as a career. But I think long term, I was never going to be happy being anything but the boss myself.
So where do you think that seed of inception for entrepreneurship started? It was anyone in your family an entrepreneur, or you hung around a lot of entrepreneurs?
The first one, actually, I think it was just a matter of not wanting to be at anyone else's whim. I wanted to be able to take vacations when I wanted. I wanted to be able to set my own schedule. I didn't want to have to ask someone else for permission to do anything. And I think that's where I came from. But no, I'm actually the first entrepreneur in my family. Most people in my family have just worked a corporate job and done quite well at it. But I just needed to find something different, I think.
So when you started exploring it, and you really, you know what I'm saying, I mean, you made a dramatic change at leaving at such a young age the States and then going overseas to Eastern Europe. How was the family and your support system? Did they understand your journey, or was there a lot of resistance?
Yeah, I mean, very fortunate that I had some very understanding parents who, they had their doubts and they were certainly skeptical in some ways, but they were ultimately supportive. And everyone else in the family, I never really heard their opinions, never really cared, to be honest. But mom and dad had my back, and they may not have understood why I was doing it. They may not have ever understood my businesses really, but they supported me and just wanted me to be happy. And that's ultimately all that I could really ever ask for in that situation. And it worked out great, obviously. And they understand, and they understood, you know, why I did what I ultimately did.
So you started because you're so analytical. You saw where there was opportunity to create situations, services. I think you was talking about like the dating world and I guess enhancing the experiences from a consumer end. So like just the blog and building that and with all the other things that you have built. How was that journey for you, like starting off, and like how did you actually get it to the point to where you can create enough traction to where you get millions of users?
Well, back when I started blogging, I mean, this was like 2013. So the competition was not anywhere near what it was today. You could write articles, based off of a certain keyword. And if you ranked in Google, like you were going to be getting thousands of hits a day. And you didn't have to be particularly talented to do that. Just simply writing reasonably well, adding some images, adding the proper tags and other SEO technical elements. It was very, very simple. It was very easily outsourced and it did really well. At that same time, like social media, like if you go tweet stuff now, if I have 22,000 followers and I'd say it's pretty normal that maybe 200 people will see them. Back then, if you had 22,000 followers, 22,000 people were gonna see it. So a lot has changed over the years. Everything that I did would be significantly harder to do now because the internet grew up, social media happened, a lot of different things happened that made the competition a heck of a lot more fierce. So back then, it was really just a matter of executing every day. And I think people can still do this. If you just work on one thing, instead of jumping around all these different things, then it'll eventually find success if you're in the right business. And that was what I promised myself was I am going to post something every single day to this blog for at least a year. And that was like when I first quit my job. And by the end of that year, it was doing pretty well. It was more than enough to make a living living out in Eastern Europe and sticking with one thing and executing on it like first thing in the morning every day instead of jumping around, I think really pays off for a lot of people.
I love people who are disruptors. So then, okay, doing business in Eastern Europe versus, I guess, doing business here in the States. What have you seen as far as like the difference, and is it a, like really a big difference with culture?
It depends on what you're doing. So certain things are significantly more difficult to do in Eastern Europe and they will drive you absolutely mad. Like, you can open an LLC in the United States in like 2 hours in certain states. And you'll get your paperwork back that same day. Here, it's going to be at least a month-long process for most countries. So in some ways, it's very, very different. I still think like, I've run my company from America. We place people from abroad in American businesses. But America is still a really good place to do business. It's still very cutting edge in a lot of ways. But I think what's happened in the last few years is a lot of people have, since COVID, just they don't seem like they want to work. And every time I talk to business owners, I'm just all the time I hear the struggle. I can't find help. I can't find help. You go drive down the street, you see it everywhere, just hiring, desperate. And I think that's where people have now said, hey, if I can go abroad and I can go get someone who's really excited about this job, then that's something I'm going to do. And now we've placed people like in anesthesiology clinics, we've placed people at tire dealerships, like answering the phones. So those businesses are so desperate for anything that this is where they're going. And I can't say I blame them. If they're begging and pleading and they can't get any help locally, then they have no choice.
So is it, you think that is due to like one out what I've seen COVID and the whole pandemic do is for a certain amount of people, it made them see themselves and how it incorporated value into them, right? They were under the old model, under the new model, you know what I'm saying? Because everybody was remote, they were seeing how much they was actually saving, not traveling so much, the time that they were getting back. You know, I'm like, there's time associated with going to the job, leaving the job, and you know, just dealing with traffic and all that stuff. I think it helped some people raise their value. So now they're like, you know what? Instead of working for this particular job, doing this, and not really feeling valued and not being compensated at the level that I think I should, I'm gonna go somewhere else, or I'm gonna go, you know, and work for myself. Do you think, you know? That's one of the reasons, and or companies, I felt, you know what I'm saying, for the most part, we're getting over on people. You know, it's always about the big ones, you know, making the most profit for, you know, your profit sharing for the, you know, the holders and stuff, shareholders and things of that nature, and not really being centered around the employee anymore.
I think it's a combination of like everything that you just mentioned there. And I think the big one though is the office and the lifestyle, a commute. So, when I had that job in Los Angeles, I had a boss, the company was in Santa Monica, which is like near the beach in Los Angeles. And I had a boss who lived up in Santa Clarita, which is like kind of up in the hills. And he was, for a 35-mile commute, I think he was leaving his house at 4:30 a.m. to get there by 6:30. So he was spending 3.5 to like 5 hours on bad days in his car. So when you're doing that and you're just getting by and you just have enough to put food on the table for you and your family, yeah, I think some people men, rightfully so, maybe, are just fed up with that kind of situation and that system. So I think that's definitely a huge part of it is when people start saying, like, oh, we're going to go back to the office, people are like, well, no, I want those 3 hours of my every day of my life back. That's 15 hours a week. That's not a small chunk. That's 10% of your life almost. So they're like, yeah, I want that time back for myself, not to dedicate to my employer while I'm not even getting paid. I'm just driving.
So in your entrepreneurial journey, because you're like what, 10 years in now, correct?
Just about.
What have you learned along the way that you necessarily didn't know, and what has been the most surprising thing for you?
I think the most surprising thing for me has been in the last couple of years when I kind of went away from being like a solopreneur and started like hiring people and building out systems was it was almost shocking how little you could actually start working when everyone else is kind of putting all those pieces and moving the board as needed. So now, my job is to think strategically and to think big. And sometimes the most productive thing I can do is go for a long walk and think about a problem and bring a notepad and, draw sketches about how this is going to be solved. And it's no longer at all about how busy I am or how hard I work. It's about the value of the problem that I'm solving. And I think that's been the big eye opener is that you really want to work smarter and not harder. And that's just amplified the more you are an entrepreneur and the bigger your company gets, just gets amplified.
How is it getting, workers to buy into the vision?
I think in our case, like it's been kind of a circumstance where people in Ukraine, obviously with everything going on with the war, I've got a bunch of Ukrainians who are like, this is helping our people, our country. So that vision of, hey, we're helping good people get good jobs that are paying them well is really, really powerful. I think almost everything that I've done though, besides kind of like the blog and the dating stuff, was kind of mission-based in a way. Like the olive oil company, based out of Croatia was all about like, hey, some of the oils in the US really aren't that good for you. Like this is real stuff from a we know where exactly it's from. It's from the family farm. So I think having those sort of mission-based company objectives where you're kind of disrupting something in a positive way, gets it easy for people to buy in then.
How has the reception for the olive oil company been? Are you selling it here in the States as well, or?
Yeah, we sell it online in the States. It's pure online e-commerce at this point. It's recession-wise, it's so expensive because it's so expensive to ship it over there. I don't think it's really impacted us because it's a certain very niche clientele, which of course limits the growth. Like we're never going to be disrupting, we're never going to be on like major supermarket shelves or anything of the sort. But a lot of people know about it. A lot of people are signed up on a subscription. They get it delivered every couple months. So, we're almost capped out as well. Like the farm that my business partner runs it only has so much capacity. So, yeah, kind of a good problem to have.
That's good. I like that. And the fact that you realize that, like you said, it doesn't have to be in the supermarket in order to make the impact that it's been making already. So, and you're
It
comfortable with
doesn't,
it.
yeah. And some headaches aren't even worth it necessarily. I think Shark Tank really glorifies a lot of this, but to actually get that kind of distribution and those kind of logistics, and then you're just at the mercy of that big reseller anyway. Like everybody wants to like be in Walmart, but like Walmart's kind of a big bully and they're gonna do what they want and you're always gonna be at their mercy. So sometimes it's just the grass isn't always that green.
I love the fact that you mentioned that, because me in podcasting, I've been podcasting since 2016, and now I'm producing shows. I think I'm actually producing six shows right now. One of them happens to be, and it's titled The Ugly Side of Entrepreneurship. And the reason being, I started that was because of shows like Shark Tank and The Profit, where they don't necessarily show all the ugly stuff of entrepreneurship. It's glorified, like you said, in the manner of it looks appealing. They try to, sell it to where everyone should be an entrepreneur, which I don't think everybody has the capacity to be an entrepreneur. They show the fruits of the labor and not the actual labor that it takes to get to that fruit, in which I tell people, like, entrepreneurship is like gardening. You have to water, water, 10, 10, 10, and then eventually you have your product, and it doesn't mean it's going to even turn out correctly.
Well, the funny thing is about the example that you just used with Shark Tank is that I think out of, say, 100 entrepreneurs that they see, how many of them actually make it on TV? So that right there, I think it's got to be no more than 5 or 10% are actually shown. So that right there is like the sweeping so much of it under the rug, all the ugly side, and showing you, oh, here's the five people that came in either really well prepared or so terribly prepared that we're all going to laugh at them. And I think that nails it right there. And also just social media now too. Everybody's posting photos. I started this business. Here's me on this jet, you know, which is parked on the ground, and I rented it. And you know, here's me in this hotel room that I rented. It's just this never-ending parade.
Yeah, I definitely get tired of all that. I'm like, ugh. Yeah, I just back when you started, I think entrepreneurship, and I'm like, that's around the same time I started too. That was like 2013. It wasn't viewed as like, this glorified thing. First of all, some people still viewed it as like, what is that? And how are you going to make money type of situation? Now it seems like, because it's been used so much in media that it's glorified to the point of like it's this dangling carrot or whatever that's in front of people. And I'm like, no, it's nothing like that. And I'm like, it's really hard work. So what are the some of the like sacrifices you've had to make in order to get to where you are?
I would say the biggest sacrifice is just when those it always comes back to you. And it's just this constant battle that you have to get up every day. And it wears on you at times, knowing that, like, hey, you know, I'm responsible in some ways, or this company is for people's livelihood. And that's a battle that you just never get to stop fighting. It's every day you got to wake up, you got to be ready to play the game. And I think the biggest sacrifice is that it just wears on you. The sacrifice is comfort. Like you said, I'm going to take the freedom, but I'm giving away all the comfort of a cushy 9-to-5 engineering job in my case. So I think that's the biggest sacrifice is I don't ever get to truly be comfortable. And of course, you know, like people these days will be, like you said, people are like imaging social media and being an entrepreneur is this great thing. People will say, well, your 9-to-5 isn't safe either. But I think that's the wrong way to look at it because you can always just kind of move on and find a new job. There's always opportunities. Whereas entrepreneurship, like I said, you got to just be up every day and be ready to play.
Exactly. So have you gotten to the point to where, others have came up to you and said, hey, Kyle, I've been watching your journey and you inspire me, so I'm gonna go out here and start something.
I've had a few people more back when I was blogging a lot, some people that quit their jobs and moved abroad and it makes me a little uncomfortable in some ways. Like, I don't want to be the reason why somebody decided to leave a career and start a business because I agree with you that I think most people are not really cut out to be entrepreneurs. I do not think it is for everybody. So it always makes me a little bit uncomfortable. And obviously, I'm rooting for them in every possible way. At the end of the day, though, it all comes down to responsibility. It's going to be them that makes it or doesn't. Like, maybe I inspired it, but I can't control what's going to happen to them or their destiny.
As a business owner, entrepreneur, and someone who employs people, the way that you look at success, is it different from what you used to look at it? And if so, how do you define it?
You can't define success by like chasing numbers and revenue because that is just a never-ending pit. There's always going to be somebody else who's got more than you, just like there's always going to be somebody else that has less than you. I've been through enough in the last couple of years between, like, you know, leaving Ukraine and having to leave my whole life there behind. I lost my mom to cancer last year that I guess at this point, like, I'm defining success as just waking up and having a successful business and providing jobs and providing value for the world. At this point, that's enough for me. Will that be the case in a couple of years? No, I'll probably want to chase another goal. But I think at the end of the day, you've got to realize how fortunate you are to be able to kind of work on your own terms. And you've got to at least try to be grateful for that. I know. And it's not easy, you know, just because I'm saying this doesn't mean that I'm perfect when I say, when I try to do this every day. It's certainly not the case. But I think these days my bar for success is just being able to do what I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to hear about your mom. I know
Yeah,
that
thank you,
feeling
man.
of losing a parent.
Yeah, it's so fun.
So when you left Ukraine, where did you go after that?
So it all kicked off on February 24th, 2022. And then basically we spent 3 days trying to get out of Ukraine, basically camping out in the cold in the back of a car, and then went into Poland. Where we stayed for a couple of days, Then we went to Prague, Czech Republic, because I had some friends and some connections there. Stayed there for about 1 month. And then my wife was pregnant at the time with our first child. So we were able to get her papers sorted to go to the US. So then we went to California, where I'm from, where my family was, until we moved back out to Poland in April of last year. Been here almost a year now again.
Okay, so back and forth between Eastern Europe and the United States, and then finally residing in Poland.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, okay, we left the war, we're having a kid soon, let's get somewhere where we've got some family support and see how things shake out was kind of the plan, so to speak.
What do you like most about Eastern Europe?
Honestly, it's days like today. It's like one of the very few nice winter days we have here. It's about 50 degrees, nice and sunny, and just being able to walk everywhere. I really enjoy that kind of lifestyle, not having to get in the car for every little thing, being able to just walk out my door. There's three grocery stores within 5 minutes, can walk to the office along the nice river, see some nice architecture. So I enjoy that part of the European lifestyle where I feel like you're moving and you're doing a lot more, and it's a little bit more immersive than just like I'm in my house in the suburbs in the States, and I drive to work and I drive back and I drive to the grocery store. It's like you're always in a box. You're either in the box of your house, the box of the office, or the box of the car. And I think it's a little more immersive here, and I enjoy that. It's probably my favorite part.
Okay, is there anything that you don't necessarily enjoy?
The winters. Winters are rough when daylight savings kicks in, it is getting light at 9 o'clock and dark by 3:30.
Oh,
So
wow.
those are really rough, very short days and just very depressing days. So really not a fan of those at all.
Yeah, I definitely can understand that. I'm like, I went to what was it, the Northeast during the summer, and it was like getting dark around 5 or 6 or something like that. I was like, what? Hold on. And when we think about where we're positioned in the world and stuff like that, it makes sense. You're on the
It does, yeah.
same Eastern, like I'm in Georgia, so I'm on the same time zone, but I'm in Georgia. I'm like in central Georgia at that. I'm like, well, we get during the summer, we get all the sun hours and stuff.
I just did. A lot of people don't realize that us here in Europe are, pretty much parallel with like Maine. So northeast weather.
Yeah. Wow. So, how long did it take you to adjust, like, you know what I'm saying, to the whole different culture in a whole different continent?
I'm still adjusting on at times, man. It gets easier when you just get used to being a foreigner and you learn some of the language, you start to understand the culture. But I would say, there's still stuff like sometimes my wife will say things and I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, this doesn't make any sense. This isn't how things are supposed to be. So it's a never-ending learning curve. And now that I have a daughter too, it's like I see what she's learning. She's getting part of this culture, part of that culture. So it's very interesting. I would say though that if you're going to go and do something like that, you'll be pretty well adjusted within like a year, I would say. And if you're really struggling at that point, then maybe it's not for you.
Is there any advice you would give yourself if you can go back and on your journey of entrepreneurship and making all these different decisions that you would do something differently?
Yes, the biggest advice I would give myself would be sell to people who already have money, instead of trying to convince people who don't have money to buy something. It is way easier to sell to people who already have money, who are actively looking to solve a problem. Better to go where the market's hot, where you have a solution to a problem, than just hoping that the right customers come along to you because you have a solution to maybe what they have as a problem.
So, with your business, the Hire UA, that's more of a service-based business, right?
Yeah, that's a B2B service business.
How were you able to land like your first business client?
Pretty much from my personal brand and the blog and the network. So I had enough people on Twitter. I was living in Ukraine. I had hired an assistant there and I was just kind of talking about it. And then someone was like, hey, do you think you could source me a virtual assistant from Ukraine? I was like, I don't see why not. So that was kind of how it started, was a couple friends inquired about it. A couple friends made hires, and then it kind of just snowballs from there. You get a few clients, you get a few testimonials, word gets around, you're able to kind of use that in your marketing. So that is really kind of how it got started, was me being there on the ground in Ukraine and, getting lucky to a certain extent, of course.
How are you able to scale that business?
Honestly, by hiring the right people. It sounds very cliche, but when we got busier and busier, I just started hiring more and more people. So then it became, I went from doing all the recruiting, all the client communications, to not having to do any of that. And then I can focus on the bigger marketing stuff. And now I've got, a head of video who does everything, all the thumbnails, all the production. So I've just continued to take little pieces of the business and slowly but surely get them off of my plate so that they run smoothly without my input, which then allows me to take on something else, pursue a new avenue, for leads or sign more clients. So every little piece that I'm able to move off my plate is something else. I get that time back, and I can focus on growing the business.
So what are your plans, I guess, for 2024 then? What do you want to accomplish with the business?
I'm hoping that we are going to do maybe 5x more from where we currently are, and that the team is going to maybe double in size. That's kind of my tentative goal. I'm also working on a platform, a software in the related to the current business, Hire UA, and hoping to launch that and get a user base going with that as well. So those are the big plans for 2024. And then the goal is also to take a 3 week vacation with the phone off and nothing to do with work. So we'll
Yeah,
see.
definitely. Yeah. Hey, if you can get that, more hats off to you.
I know, I'm trying.
As an entrepreneur, and then you create things as well, and you see where you interact with the world and the business world, and you see all these different problems and you come up with solutions. Have you gotten to the point to where once you have everything running smoothly in your eyes, you think you might dive into other different type of ventures or industries?
I've already been in so many different ones. I'm sure at some point I will do another total 180 and start something totally new in a different industry. I would say what I'm in right now, I'm still really enjoying 3 years in, so no immediate plans to do so, but I'm sure I will at some point, either exit the company perhaps, or just remove myself completely and hire a CEO to run the day-to-day. And I'm sure at that point I'm not going to retire. I'm only 32, so I'm not ready to retire. So I'll find something else to occupy my time with.
Okay. So for everybody out there, anyone interested in doing a consultation, learning more about Hire a UA,
Yeah,
where do they need to go?
hire-ua.com and book a call with the sales team. If you're a business looking for some remote talent or help, we'd obviously love to talk to you. And you can also check out my site, kylemau.com.
Well, Kyle, I appreciate your time. Thank you for your insight and
Likewise.
all the different jewels you were sitting there dropping.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me on.
Definitely that weather thing. Oof, I can do that.
What?
Hard winters. The hard winters, I could not do that.
I don't recommend them to anybody, man. They are, but the summers kind of make up for it. But
Yeah.
that's what I say every summer, and then by winter, I'm like, no, that wasn't worth the trade-off at all.
The summertime comes back around. He's like, this internal battle. Oh, it looks lovely out
Yeah.
here in the summertime. But Kyle,
Yeah.
appreciate your time.
Take care, man. Thank you so much for having me. Cheers.